Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur ki jai. Prem Shikahoshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Sharmakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Dhamma ki jai. Mathura Dhamma ki jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma ki jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma ki jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai. Tulsi Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvisesa Sanyavadi Paskachadi Satarani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uttal Padakamaham Sri Guru and Vaishnavamascha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padichana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Sha Vantrakalpa Chivisha Keep us in the Vieva Tapatichanam Pavanevio Vaishnavi Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it is April 27th, 2020, Hillsboro, North Carolina. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 16, Verse 28. Yadyat Chirona Namatenga Sataika Shirshnas.
Yadyat Chirona
Namatenga Sataika Shirshnas. Tatan Mamarda Karadanda Darong Gripatai.
Tatan Mamarda Karadanda Darong Gripatai.
Shina Yusho Brahmata Udvan Ashyato Shrin.
Shina Yusho Brahmata.
Nastova man paramakashmala mapanaga.
Nastova man paramakashmala mapanaga.
Yet.
Yet.
Whichever.
Shiraha.
Heads. Na namate. Would not bow down. Anga.
My dear King Cricket.
Sata eka shirshna. Of him who had 101 heads. Tut-tut. Those. Mamarda. Trampled down. Kata. On those who are evil. Danda. Punishment. Dadaha. The Lord who exerts. Angri patai. With the blows of his feet. Shina ayushaha. Of Kaliya, whose life was becoming depleted. Brahmataha, who was still moving about. Ulbanam, terrible. Ashyataha, from his mouth. Ashkrit, blood. Nastaha, from his nostrils. Vaman, vomiting. Parama, extreme. Kashmalam, trouble. Apa, experienced. Nakaha, the serpent. Translation. My dear king, Kaliya had 101 prominent heads, and when one of them would not bow down, Lord Shri Krishna, who inflicts punishment on cruel wrongdoers, would smash that stubborn head by striking it with his feet. Then, as Kaliya entered his death throes, he began wheeling his heads around and vomiting ghastly blood from his mouths and nostrils. The serpent thus experienced extreme pain and anxiety. So it's no purport in the BBT, Bhagavatam. There is a purport by Srila Jiva Goswami. we'll read Manuswami's purport, translation here. O king, when one of Kaliya's 100 prominent heads would not bow down, Krishna, who inflicts punishment on cruel wrongdoers, would crush that head by striking it with his feet. Almost dead, wandering in confusion, the serpent experienced extreme pain, vomiting profuse blood from his mouth and nostrils. Jiva Goswami's purport. Kaliya had 100 chief Eka heads among many more, since in verse 30 it is said that he had thousands of hoods. He was almost dead. Kushinayushaha. Ulbanam means profuse. So it's just interesting here. Jiva Goswami is using something called hermeneutics. Hermeneutics means the science of how we understand the statements in Shastra, the statements, particularly in Shastra, but the statements also from Guru and Sadhus. So in this verse, it says 101 heads, and you might think, well, then he has 101 heads. But because two verses later, it says 1,000 heads, therefore Jiva Goswami is saying these were the chief heads. So it wasn't necessary for Krishna to dance on all 1,000 heads. Oh, he could just dance on the chief ones. So here we have Krishna's feet on Kaliya's head, dancing on Kaliya's head, is understood by Kaliya as a punishment. Kaliya is experiencing extreme pain. He's vomiting blood. So, you know, he starts out being able to spit out fire. Right? Like there's so many stories in every culture of dragons, right? And the dragons can always exhibit fire from their mouth and nose. So Kali was doing that. He was exhibiting fire from his mouth and nose. But by Krishna dancing on his head, he was instead vomiting blood. And he was very confused. He was just like, when we're confused, we may be just kind of wandering around. What am I doing? Where am I going? And so instead of Kali having complete control over his movements, he was just kind of wandering around. This word for wandering is also there in the song about Krishna, that Krishna's wandering sweet, Pramitam Madhuram. But of course, Kali's wandering wasn't very sweet for him. It was just painful. So those who are evil feel Krishna's dealings with them as punishment. But those who are devotees feel Krishna's dealings with them as pleasure. You know, I was thinking of dancing on the heads in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Gopal Kumar is describing how he finally gets to Goloka Vrindavan. And he says, sometimes Krishna goes to Mathura, even in the spiritual world, that Akura comes, takes Krishna to Mathura, and everybody's apparently distressed. Then Krishna comes back, and after he's back for a while, everyone forgets he went to Mathura. They think of it like a dream. And then after some time, he goes back to Mathura, and so forth. And the question is raised, why do you stay in Vrindavan when Krishna leaves? Generally, one follows one's master. In the Ramayana, when Ram is banished to the forest, Sita says, I'm your shadow. I'm not going to stay here without you. And Ram says, but it will be very difficult. And she says, I don't care. She says, with you, hell becomes heaven, and without you, heaven becomes hell. I'm not going to be separate from you. All right? So the devotee usually has that mood. But Gopal Kumar says, no, Vrindavan, being in Vrindavan, even without Krishna, dances on the heads of all other happiness. And Gopal Kumar should know, because he really had gone everywhere and experienced everything before he got there. He had experienced kingship on earth, he had experienced being Indra, he had experienced being Brahma, he had experienced being on the planets of the Rishis, the Prajapatis, he had experienced being in Vaikuntha, in Ayodhya, in Dwarka. So when he says that being in Vrindavan, even in separation from Krishna, dances on the heads of all other happiness, he's speaking from experience, but he's using this term dancing on the heads in a very positive way. Yes? But Kali is not experiencing this as positive. Perhaps we've seen some people performing some acrobatic or gymnastic feats where one person gets on the head of someone else. Have you ever seen something like this? We used to have a video that we showed in the Gurukula whenever we were studying China, in this old video of these Chinese acrobats. And sometimes one of them gets on the head of somebody else. But they're not experiencing, they don't start vomiting blood and dying. They're experiencing it as pleasure. And I'm thinking about how Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna book, in the chapter on Rasalila, he says, the whole world is full of Krishna's singing. But some people appreciate it, and some people don't. And we know that Krishna's singing, right? In the previous verse, it was explained that Krishna was singing and dancing, and there was music. And in fact, we have it's explained by our acharyas that first the music was just in Krishna's mind, and then he started singing, and the demigods started trying to accompany him, and there was fast, slow, and medium rhythms, and the demigods were keeping pace, and they kept doing new melodies, and Krishna would keep pace. But after a while, the demigods couldn't keep up with Krishna. The Gandharvas and Apsaras, they tried to dance like Krishna, but they couldn't do it. So after a while, they just did their own dances. They didn't try to coordinate, you know, they tried to have it like more complementary instead of synchronized. And they were playing drums and so forth. So there was this whole dancing festival. And Prabhupada also says in the Krishna book that not only is the world full of Krishna singing, but it's full of Krishna's dancing. And he said some respond rightly to the dancing of Krishna, and some do not. And he said, we should dance with Krishna, not dance independently or dance with somebody else. So here, Kaliya could have been dancing with Krishna. Imagine that. He could have been dancing with Krishna. I mean, I hate to say this, but all of us conditioned souls are just as sinful as Kaliya. We may not see ourselves that way, but we are. We're trying to stake out some claim in this world, and we don't have a very favorable view to people who interfere with our desire to enjoy. So Kaliya makes his kingdom in this lake of the Yamuna, and he poisons anybody else who wants to come near him. And that's what we do. But we may not do it as dramatically as Kaliya. Right? I mean, of course, human beings are doing it pretty dramatically with all their pollution of the world. But even we're doing that in our relationships with others. You know, get out of my way. Don't bother me. This is my space. This is what I want to do. If you're bothering me, then you know, I hope that something bad happens to you if I can't do it myself. So we have that mood. And when Krishna comes dancing in our life, we often also take it as a punishment. We also often take it as Krishna's interfering with my life. He's messing up my plans. He's not allowing me to do what I want. And we fight him. And in fighting him, we experience all this distress. Instead of, well, Krishna's coming to dance, I could dance too. I could dance with Krishna. Like the demigods, they're trying to dance with Krishna. I mean, they can't quite keep up, and so they're just doing their own accompaniment as best that they can. Now, in the spiritual world, there is also a Kaliya who does dance with Krishna. And he takes Krishna for rides up and down the Yamuna. So there's some reality of which this is a reflection. Right? That would be fun. Like, just like kids like to go on amusement park rides. Right? And some of them involve water. So Krishna likes to go. Sanatana Goswami says also Krishna sometimes invites the gopis onto Kaliya's hooves and dances with the gopis. And Kaliya is part of that, and he gets to participate in that. But here, this demon Kaliya, he doesn't want to dance with Krishna. He wants to dance independently, and so he's experiencing this dancing as pain. So I thought we would contrast this with devotees who had Krishna's feet on their head and were happy. I'm going to ask some of you, can any of you think of some examples where the Lord's feet were on a devotee's head and the devotee was like, oh, it was a good thing?
So, which one, remember which pastime is where Nityananda puts his feet?
Oh, Nityananda put his feet on Chidananda Sen's chest. Also head. He put his feet on Raghunath Das Goswami's head. Okay, that's a good example. So when Raghunath Das Goswami came to see Lord Nityananda, and Lord Nityananda called him a thief. And come here, I'm going to punish you. He said, you're a thief, I'm going to punish you. And he put his feet on his head. Raghunath Das Goswami was very happy that he had gotten the shelter of Lord Nityananda. And from that, of course, he got the shelter of Lord Chaitanya, which is what he had desired. Thank you. Annie, I hadn't thought of that. Thank you. I love it when people think of things that I didn't think of. So some other examples.
Bali Maharaj.
Where Bali Maharaj said, you know, okay, you think I'm a liar. You've taken everything with two steps. You please put your third step on my head. Yes, and he was very happy. I've been claimed by Krishna. Some other example. There's Ahalya. So Ahalya had committed adultery with Indra. I mean, Indra was disguised as her husband, but still she knew what was going on. And her husband had cursed her to become a stone. And when Ram came through her ashram, he put his feet on the stone at the direction of Vishramita, and Ahalya regained her original form, and she rejoined her husband. And then I'm thinking about Uddhava, who put his head on Krishna's feet. He came intentionally, put his head on Krishna's feet. Also thinking about the serpent that was swallowing Nanda, and Krishna put his feet on his head, and the serpent was very happy. It actually relieved him of that curse. Yes? I mean, the gopis wanted to put their dust from their feet on Krishna's head to relieve him of his headache. Sometimes Krishna takes the feet of the devotees on his own head also. I'm thinking in the Rasalila, when Krishna leaves and he comes back, and then he's sitting with the gopis, and it's said that the gopis took his feet on their lap and they were massaging his feet, but our acharyas say that Krishna may have massaged the feet of the gopis as well. And sometimes when the gopis get angry with Krishna, Krishna falls at their feet and he touches their feet to his head, and sometimes they'll have marks from their footlap on his head. So Krishna takes the feet of his devotees on his head. The devotees take Krishna's feet on their head. And they take it as something very joyful. You know, even today in Indian society, bowing down at someone's feet is a sign of respect. Taking your head and putting it at somebody's feet. Taking the dust from someone's feet. We talk about being elevated by the devotees. And Bhaktivinoda, in his commentary on Manashiksha, this would be text 7, when he talks about how we can become free of the desire for honor. He says we do this by serving the great devotees, and we can serve the great devotees by taking the dust from their feet and putting it on our head, or taking the water that's washed their feet and putting it on our head. Whenever anyone bathes in the Ganga, they're taking the water that washes the feet of Vamadeva and putting it on their head. So this concept of it being very joyful. You know, materially, somebody to walk on your head doesn't sound very nice at all, and that's how Kaliya experienced it. But with Krishna, it's very joyful, and one can then, especially Krishna's dancing. You know, there are devotees, not only there are devotees who want to be gopis and cowherd boys, or, you know, Krishna's elders, but there are devotees who want to be the ground. There are devotees who want to be the flowers. And our acharyas explain that every day Krishna touches every plant. You know, he's interacting with every devotee in the spiritual world. And there are flowers that want to fall at Krishna's feet, and they want that the deliciousness of Krishna's feet touching them as he walks. And the gopis talk about how Mother Earth is so happy to have Krishna's feet on her. And imagine when Krishna's dancing with the cowherd boys, or when he's a little boy and he's dancing for the Mother Yasoda and Mohini and their friends. Right? He's dancing on the earth. He's dancing on the grass, the ground, the little bugs. But they're not getting crushed and killed. They're also dancing. And Krishna's dancing on the flowers when he's dancing with the gopis. No, Krishna loves to dance. Krishna loves to dance, and Krishna's dancing. In various circumstances, there's devotees who are experiencing his dancing on their heads. And they're in ecstasy. Krishna's dancing on my head. So Kaliya could have responded like that. Right? Kaliya could have responded that, wow, Krishna's dancing on my head. This is a wonderful thing. Let me dance with him. And Krishna's dancing on Kaliya's heads to relieve him of his sinful mentality. So symbolically, metaphorically, this vomiting of blood, this vomiting of poison, is Kaliya getting rid of his sinful mentality, getting rid of his attachment. You know, it was happening literally, he was literally vomiting blood, but it also has an inner meaning. And the devotees accept chastisement. I mean, this is literally chastisement, physical punishment, or rebukes, or so-called reverses given by the Lord as a way of relieving them of their material attachments. You know, we gain some understanding in Krishna consciousness that our suffering is not due to our circumstances, but is due to how we view our circumstances, how we interpret our circumstances. It's due to our consciousness about our circumstances. And we've all experienced that even materially, where something happens that we interpret as bad, and we're upset, and we're suffering, and when we find out that what we thought was bad was actually good, then we're happy about it. Has everyone had an experience like that? Something happens, and you think, oh, that was really, really bad. That was just terrible. And we're experiencing some kind of pain, physical, emotional, whatever. And then later, you know, it's like if you missed your flight, and then the plane crashes. You know, I had an experience where I was really, really late for a flight. Like, I just got there in the last minute. And because of that, my luggage was put in a different place, because they had already put all the luggage in and locked the door. And when I arrived at my destination, the main luggage place was broken. Nobody got their luggage. I was the only one who got my luggage, because I had been so late. And then a few months after that, the airline gave everybody free miles. They gave everybody 10,000 miles because they said, you couldn't get your luggage. We had to send the plane back to another country to get it fixed. And I wrote them, I said, I got my luggage. They said, you can keep the miles anyway. But when I was late for the plane, I was in so much anxiety. You know, I was calling the airline, and if I miss my flight, will you put me on another plane? No, you'll just have to buy another ticket. Right? I was thinking, oh, this is terrible, this is terrible. And then later I saw this was wonderful. Right? So the circumstances are not what causes us pain. It's how we interpret the circumstances. It's how we view the circumstances that causes us pain. This is true even when it comes to physical pain that appears to be very objective. You know, even if you break your arm and it hurts, you can say, but how one experiences that, as good or bad, depends upon one's consciousness. Just hearing Srila Prabhupada say this morning that the way we get free of material miseries is not to change the externals, but to change our consciousness. And Krishna says this in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that freedom from all material miseries comes from seeing the self with a pure mind and relishing and rejoicing in the self. Krishna never says that freedom from material miseries comes from adjusting one's material circumstances so that there's no apparent external suffering. And we find that devotees, they perceive interactions with this world that appear to be suffering as relieving their sins. And Kaliya could have seen it like that too. You know, later when Kaliya says his prayers, which our acharyas say were just repetition of the prayers of his wives, because he was so exhausted that he couldn't think of his own prayers. and his wives were great devotees, which is actually why Kaliya was able to surrender, because he had the association of his wives who were great devotees. But anyway, while he's saying his prayers, he says, "My dear Lord, I'm so sorry, but being in this body of a snake, I have this really ignorant nature. My body is full of an angry nature. And so I'm just acting according to the nature of my body. What can I do about that?" I mean, Krishna says that to Arjuna. What can repression accomplish? Everyone is going to act according to their own nature. So Kaliya could have been happy at this point in the Leela that this sinful nature is being purged from me. You know, all of us, if we're conditioned souls, we all have some natural tendencies that are not good. And if we're honest, we all know that. We have certain ways of acting and thinking that are very automatic and intrinsic to us that we don't like. Probably other people don't like them either. Everybody has this, yes? Yes? We have certain ways of acting and being that we're happy with, like, oh, I like this part of myself, I'm really happy with this part. And sometimes it's the same thing. Sometimes the thing that we're happy about in certain circumstances is exactly the thing that we're not happy that we do in other circumstances. Okay. So wouldn't it be lovely if Krishna came along and said, okay, I'm going to fix that. I'm going to free you of the parts of your nature that you don't like. Just like people go to a plastic surgeon to change their bodies, to make their bodies look like they would like it to look. Am I correct? Yeah? Somebody goes to a plastic surgeon and says, you know, can my nose be this way, and my chin be this way, and my ears over here, and, you know, this body part bigger, and this body part smaller, or whatever. And it's, thankfully I've never had plastic surgery. I mean, you can tell I would have looked this ugly if I did, but I assume that it's painful. I assume that getting surgery is painful. You have to be anesthetized to get surgery, and afterwards it must be painful. But people think, well, this pain is worth it. It's worth it because then I get to have them, or, you know, I have a grandson who's a weightlifter. I'm not sure what he's doing now with all the gyms closed. But, you know, it's painful to go and lift heavy weights. It's not easy. But he's doing it because that way he gets the body that he wants. He gets his six-pack and his big biceps. And, you know. So we can all understand that seeming pain, in order to relieve us of our faults, in order to become the kind of people we'd want to become, is not pain. The person getting plastic surgery doesn't think, oh, this is so painful, this is so painful. You know, or I've even heard from people who get tattoos. You know, they enjoy the pain. They're like, give me another one. So the devotees seem like that with Krishna. The devotees see the apparent pain of Krishna dealing with us in a way that's getting rid of our false ego as pleasure. I mean, the difficulty is that anything we've taken as our identity, whether it's pleasing or not pleasing, our material identity, is going to be painful to lose. That's just the reality. Anything that we've accepted as this is myself, even if it's hurting us, we don't like to give it up. Right? We have this experience even with things. Yes? I'm sure all of us have something that is simply trouble, and we keep it. Some people have a lot of that sort of thing. Some people have a whole home full of things. You know, I know someone who keeps so many things that there's hardly room in her house to walk. But she doesn't want to give them up. So there's going to be some difficulty involved with getting rid of our identities and attachments that are only causing us pain. It's just what it is. But the devotees see that as pleasure. And I was thinking of some examples. I was thinking of, I'm reading right now again in the Bhagavatam about Chitraketu, and how when Chitraketu was cursed by Parvati to become a demon. I mean, anybody here want to become a demon? Who wants to become a demon? You know, some big ugly monster that's attacking the universe? You know, I don't want to do that. But he accepted it. And Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport that this was Krishna. Krishna saw that when Chitraketu was flying around the universe with all the Vidyadhara women on his ladies' traveling Sankirtan party. You know, first he had his 10 million wives and then he had his so many Vidyadhara ladies. He's traveling around in his spaceship. That he was a great devotee, he'd seen Sankarsana, but he wasn't making his progress as fast as he could. So Krishna arranged for him to be cursed to be a demon. So he would go back to Godhead very quickly. And Chitraketu accepted it. He said to Parvati, "Yes, Mother, whatever you want, I will accept." And I was also reading yesterday about King Indrajuna. I don't think it's the same one who had the Jagannath Puri temple. But he was cursed by the sage because when Indrajuna was in meditation, he didn't respond. Right? That's the same thing with Parikit and Samakarishi, with Shiva and Daksha. And so the sage cursed him. May you become an elephant. And as an elephant, of course, he was the king of the elephants, Gajendra, the Indra of the Gajas. And Krishna came and saved him and took him immediately to Vaikuntha. And we're talking about Nityananda kicking Shivananda Sen. I mean, that's kind of a heavy story. Shivananda Sen was arranging all of the travel necessities for all the devotees. You know, he took charge of the devotee party. As they were traveling from Bengal to Jagannath Puri every year, he would pay the tolls on the way and he would arrange everyone's accommodation. And, you know, there weren't phones in those days. So it wasn't like today, where if you travel someplace, Lord knows whether we're ever going to travel any place anymore. But anyway, it used to be in the old days when I was young, and we used to travel places. And you could arrange in advance where you were going to stay. Right? You could book your hotels. I mean, even before mobile phones, we used to be able to do that. I remember in 86, we traveled around India. You know, we booked everything in advance, the flights, where we would stay in temples, or if we were going to stay in a hotel, right? But in Shivananda Sen's day, you couldn't do that. And there weren't hotels then. People used to stay in temples. Temples used to act as hotels and restaurants. That was true in medieval Europe also, that the churches acted as hotels, churches and monasteries, as hotels and restaurants. It was one of the main ways that they made their livelihood. And then people had some religious place to stay. Anyway, so he would have to arrange this as they got to the place, you know, so he'd get to the place, and then he would go ahead, or he would send somebody ahead to arrange a place. It was a large party for everyone to stay. In this case, there was some trouble at the government toll booth. Yeah, that happens, right? Sometimes some toll officer, some immigration officer, right, there's some delay. I mean, I've been in immigration line sometimes for 2 hours. And Shivananda Sen was thinking that he didn't want all the other devotees just to be waiting. So he said, "Why don't you go ahead into the village and you can, you know, just kind of relax in the village and I'll take care of this." But they didn't have a place to stay because it couldn't be arranged till Shivananda Sen went into the village. So he was at the toll booth for a long time. By the time he caught up with all the devotees, a long time had elapsed. And Lord Nityananda was upset that they had no place to stay all that time. And he went up to Shivananda Sen and he kicked him in the chest. "Why didn't you, you know, arrange a place for us to stay?" And he cursed, Nityananda said, "I curse your sons to die." Right? And Shivananda Sen's wife, her mood was, "Let all our sons die if Nityananda's been inconvenienced for a moment." That was her mood. "We've inconvenienced the Lord even for a moment. Fine. Whatever price we have to pay, it's nothing. Shivananda Sen wasn't disturbed. Shivananda's nephew, Shrikant, he was upset. He thought Lord Nityananda was abusive. And he wanted to report him. Of course, it wasn't the CPO to report him to. So he decided to report him to Lord Chaitanya. So he went ahead of the whole party, and he went to Jagannath Puri, and he came to see Lord Chaitanya. And when you would see a superior person in those days, part of the etiquette was you take off your upper cloth. Just like in a lot of Indian temples, men cannot enter with an upper cloth. But he was so upset about the behavior of Lord Nityananda that he didn't take off his upper cloth. And one of the devotees was going to say something to him, hey, you know, you're not following etiquette. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, don't bother him. He's upset. And just by that empathy from Lord Chaitanya, Shrikant was passed. He was completely passed. He said, oh, Lord Chaitanya already knows what's going on. Everything's okay. It was interesting that Shivananda Sen and Shivananda, by the way, the children did not die. It's interesting that Shivananda Sen and Shivananda Sen's wife took that as mercy. So we have the contrast with the demons like Kaliya, who just keeps fighting and fighting and fighting. He doesn't accept Krishna's mercy. He just keeps fighting and fighting and fighting. But unlike most demons, he does get it together before he dies because of his wives. But we have lots of demons who don't. They just keep fighting Krishna. Right? And finally Krishna has to kill him. Think about Ravana, you know, Ramchandra kills one after another, his brothers, his sons, and, you know, when we were watching the videos, you kept thinking, come on, Ravana, surrender! Just surrender, it will be fine. And he doesn't do it. So, we have a choice as to how we want to respond. Do we want to see the things that, you know, we're praying for pure devotional service, right? Yes? I hope. If we're not, you might want to think about it. And then Krishna says, if you want pure devotional service, you're going to have to give up your material attachments. And we're Krishna says, we can give it up by dancing. And then it depends. Do we want to dance with Krishna? Or do we want to try to dance independently? And experience? Do we want to experience Krishna's dancing as fun? Or do we want to experience it as kicking? That's really up to us, how we experience it. And even if initially we may experience it as kicking, as soon as we surrender, then we'll experience it as dancing. So I think we only have like, on my watch we have 2 minutes, on that clock we have 0 minutes. Yes?
I just thought of another interesting example in reference to what you were speaking about, the chastisement of a great acharya. He was always upset because Lord Chaitanya considered him his superior. And he wanted the chastisement of the Lord so much so that he preached
my, yes, so just to repeat for those people who are listening online, so Krishna Priya was saying that Advaita Acharya didn't like the fact that Lord Chaitanya dealt with him with reverence as a superior, and so he intentionally preached impersonalism so Lord Chaitanya would come and chastise him. Because when you rebuke somebody, it's a sign of intimacy. Isn't it? Right? When you're able to say to somebody, hey, that's stupid. Hey, stop being a jerk. You know, if we can say that and the relationship goes on, that means we have a very intimate relationship with somebody. It's a sign of trust. Which is why we say Krishna enjoys the insults of the devotees in Vrindavan more than the Vedic hymns, because they have that intimacy. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Prabhupada ki jai.